We're invited into one of these wonderful miracle stories about Jesus. And if we didn't have anything else in the scriptures, if a story like this was the only fragment that had come down to us, I mean, what would we learn about Jesus? Is he a good guy or a bad guy? Is he compassionate and caring, or does he doesn't care really about other people? Does he have power and authority to be able to do this kind of work? Does he have insight? Is he able to experience? He has this profound sense of just connection with people around him. So it's this extraordinary story that is given to us. And the scripture then also ties it with our first reading, kind of reminding us of God's original purpose for us, that we were created to have life. We were created to live forever. That death wasn't God's original purpose, but death had to enter in, as C.S. Lewis says, like as a tourniquet to prevent sin bleeding us out forever. And so death is part of the natural cycle now, but it's not God's original purpose to be. For this he created all, with the Book of Wisdom tells us. So as we go through our story today, we discover that Jesus has come from the other side of the lake, and he comes across to the western shore again. In the Gospel of Matthew, he situates this story in Capernaum, in Capernaum, in Jesus' hometown, but Mark doesn't tell us the exact detail of where it happened. But there's this crowd of people, and as he arrives at the village, then Jairus comes forward to present his need to Jesus, to say, look, my little daughter is desperately sick. There doesn't seem to be any hesitation. Jesus just goes with Jairus and the rest of the crowd to attend to this need. And the crowd presses in, and we get all of the drama that surrounds that. And then Mark interrupts the story to tell us about this other person, this woman who has this need. She's been bleeding over the course of for the last 12 years, Mark tells us. And so this whole, the drama of all of that. And she has this intuition, if only I can touch the hem of his garment, she thinks. And so we see her moving through the crowd and pressing up against him. And when she does, then Jesus turns in the crowd and says, who touched me? Which is a strange kind of response. I mean, what on earth is Jesus thinking? Everyone is touching you at this moment. I mean, you've all been in those crowds, you know, whether it's the big sporting event or the post-Christmas sales or whatever it is, and people are just pressing in against you. You know, when you go to World Youth Day, if you don't like crowds, it's not a fun place to be, with this whole sense of this movement of humanity around you. So in the midst of that, like, who touched me is this crazy kind of question. And yet she has this profound sense of faith. Now, it seems most likely that what Jesus would have been wearing is the tallit, which is the Jewish press shawl. I don't have one. I've actually ordered one, but it takes a while to get from Israel, apparently. So this will have to do as a demonstration of the prayer shawl. So the rabbi would always wear this because it was a symbol of his devotion, of his wanting to respond to the word of God. And so the book of Numbers, chapter 37, I'm sure you all know, has this description about the prayer shawl with the four tassels in the corners of the prayer shawl. And they were a symbol of the Torah and being faithful to all of that. And so we get this text from Malachi 3:2. It says, but for you who fear my name, the Son of Righteousness will rise with healing in its wings. And the rabbis always interpreted that as messianic prophecy. But it was also about the sense of the rabbi, that when the rabbi would bless, he would always hold up the edges of the tallit and use it as in the blessing. And so it was that sense of, you know, the wings you could see were easily represented here with the rabbi's blessing. And so there was this sense, this profound sense, that people saw that one of the signs of the Messiah coming would be that people would find healing in the wings, in the tassels on the edge of the prayer shawl, the talit, the zitzit. It's a great word, isn't it? Zitzit. You've got to say zitzit. Come on, you want to say zitzit. The four tassels that were at the edges of the of this. And so when Jesus was walking through the crowd, it would have been, you know, wrapped around him. And of course, anyway, I was just demonstrating this when I've actually got a prayer shawl, but the whole kind of different movements that you would have associated with it. So this is the promise that she's seeing. She knows that if she can just touch the edge of his zitzit, the talit, that she will be healed, because she believes in this prophecy of Malachi. She's read the scriptures. She knows, as a faithful daughter of Jerusalem, even though she's excluded, she has this trust, because she's a woman who's bleeding. So is she in or out? Is she clean or unclean? The woman with the bleeding, she's unclean. She's ritually impure. So anybody that is bleeding any of those bodily fluids, there is that sense that, you know, the Jewish people saw they were so significant for life, for vitality, but there were appropriate places where these were to be used and to be manifested. And when you were bleeding, it didn't mean you were sinful. It just meant you were unclean. You weren't able to enter into the worship of God until such point as you'd been purified. Now, through normal people, that just happened on a weekly cycle or whatever. But sometimes there were people like lepers and like this woman who were excluded until this cleared up. And she was excluded for the whole of this period. So she was unclean during all this. And yet Jesus says to her, "Daughter, your faith has saved you." Because she's unclean, if she touches someone, then she makes that person unclean as well. So her uncleanness should have been transferred to Jesus. But instead, his purity, his holiness, his being whole is transferred to this woman. And so that's why she's so afraid when Jesus points her out in the crowd, because she knows that she's done something that she should never have done. You shouldn't touch someone when you're ritually impure, because you will make that person impure. And instead, the transformation happens from Jesus to that woman. That she is transformed and healed and now made clean. And then this drama is interrupted by this group coming up to tell Jairus that, no, your daughter is dead. And you kind of wonder, couldn't they have broken the news to him a bit more gently than that, than just this interruption? It's like, oh, no, don't go any further, your daughter's dead. Like, come on, Jairus would just be devastated in the midst of all of that. And so then it's Jesus who says, don't be afraid, just have faith. And it's a beautiful thing for us to be reminded of. Now, the daughter of Jairus at this point, is she clean or unclean? Is she in or out? She's out. She's unclean. So a dead body, again, was ritually impure and unable to be touched. And so there are these two stories of people who were out, who were unclean, and yet Jesus goes to them regardless, and he touches them. He heals them. When he arrives at the house, Jesus notices all the commotion. We know that the Jewish people, this is the tradition within the ancient, or the Near East even today, that their people would come, the village would come, and they would help the people to mourn by doing the mourning for them, doing the public wailing and lamenting. The Gospel of Matthew describes musicians also at this point. And this sense of just this cacophony of sound to kind of carry the mourning. And it's a wonderful thing that so often we restrain people and keep it all bottled up. And I think this is a much healthier way of doing it. But then Jesus says, no, your daughter is not dead. She's only sleeping. And suddenly their wailing and lamenting becomes laughter. They just can't believe this. But it's interesting that when confronted with death, this is Jesus's normal responds. We read it in the Gospel of John as well in chapter 11 when Lazarus has died. And at that stage, Lazarus had been 4 days dead. He'd been buried. He'd been placed in the tomb. And when Jesus went to it and said to roll away the stone, they said, "No, Lord, you know, as the King James says, he will stinketh. He will be smelly by 4 days dead." And yet Jesus again described Lazarus as only sleeping. And so it seems to be the response of Jesus to death, to say, no, death is not this ultimate transformation. Death is just a transition. Death, we say in one of the Eucharistic prayers, that in death, life is changed, not ended. Because that is the hope of a Christian, to this transformation of our life, moves into the sleeping of death until that moment, until that glorious day when Jesus returns and calls us back to life again, and that glorious sense of the resurrection of the dead. So then he goes in, taking her by the hand. He then says to her, in one of those brief moments that we have where we remember the exact words that Jesus spoke, so often that is translated into the Greek, but in this case, there are 4 times in the Gospels where we remember the Aramaic that Jesus spoke, Talitha cum. And Talitha just means a little girl. So it's kind of the thing that a loving father would say to his child. You know, she's still asleep. Imagine that, a little girl still being asleep. And he goes in to say, you know, it's time to get up to go to synagogue. And so he would just say, my precious daughter, it's time to arise. It's time to wake up. And so it's just this beautiful, gentle call and summons to her. Little girl, arise. And of course, she does, and she gets up. And Jesus, again, with that compassion, just says, she's probably hungry. Give her something to eat. Maybe she had a sickness that prevented her from eating. And so Jesus reaches out with that compassion to her to bring her to life again. And it's a beautiful reminder to us of this power of Jesus, that when we're confronted by all those things in our lives, all those things that seem to be out of our control, that sometimes Jesus will just speak so simply and so beautifully into our lives, just to say, little child, arise. Don't be afraid, just have faith, that he will reach into those moments of darkness, those moments of despair, and to bring that power, the power of his word, the power of healing, the power of life, to declare unto us that no, the time for sleeping has passed. Little child, arise. This is the call. This is this gift of God's power, that he's able to reach into those moments and to call us back into life again.